You are listening to National Security Law Today.
Welcome to National Security Law Today, the podcast of the Standing Committee on Law and National Security. I'm Elisa Poteet here in my individual capacity. We're continuing our series on scaling AI. It's something we need to think about now and not in some imagined future. There are concerns, and yes, there is promise. And either way, it's going to impact the future of national security, including the national security workforce, the weapons we use to defend ourselves and in offensive engagement, and their efficacy. And it could affect how we assess potential conflict or the risk of conflict. But more importantly, it may affect how we see our national identity. Right now, AI models of major companies, including OpenAI, have been trained with data from poor quality data sets. And they've been supplementing that data with sources as extreme and ill-considered as pornography. A short time using any LLM will reveal hallucinations at a rate that would make Timothy Leary blush. And right now, not tomorrow, but now, data centers are consuming larger and larger amounts of electricity and water that is rightfully needed by and paid for by the American taxpaying public. And these data centers are blanketing rural environments and expanding. While companies pursue the goal of artificial general intelligence without a similar effort to compute more efficiently in the interests of climate, the planet, and the next generation of humans. The development of seemingly conscious AI without a clear need for non-human companions arrives at a time of declining birth rates and near T.S. Eliot imagined alienation among young adults and particularly young men, all against a backdrop of declining civic engagement and rising levels of mental health conditions, depression, and anxiety, apparently now sourced to distress over political divisions, a lack of in vivo communications with other humans, and a lack of community. Now, on the plus side are promises of neural networks that can assist those with Alzheimer's, restore limb mobility, and more. Promises that the very supercomputing that may destroy the environment and accelerate heating our planet could actually come up with a fix for the carbon that ails us. There are other risks being surfaced by the same people who helped build these AI models, like Timnit Gebru, the founder and executive director of the Distributed Artificial Intelligence Center and a former ethical AI research team lead at Google. For publishing some of her concerns, she was fired. These risks and the rush to win the AI race, AI companies are whitewashing history, leading to actual factual errors in legal historic documents, and they're all becoming increasingly difficult to surface. The questions raised are obvious. Can we continue to build data centers on every stretch of rural road? As AI grows, is it realistic to rely on red teams to solve model errors and fix the problem of garbage in, resulting in garbage out? What happens when we run out of data to use, or we run out of usable data, the two things being completely different? Today, we're going to talk with someone who's thinking down the road a bit. Roy Austin is the inaugural director of Howard Law School's Artificial Intelligence Initiative, and he's done a lot of other things that might be of interest, particularly to young lawyers. He was previously vice president of civil rights and deputy general counsel at Meta. Before that, he worked for a wonderful Washington law firm, Harris, Wiltshire & Grannis. He's been a trial attorney with the criminal section of the Civil Rights Division and assistant United States attorney in D.C. He's done a lot of things, but one of the things I think brings him here in terms of his experience is he worked as the White House Domestic Policy Council's deputy assistant to the president for the Office of Urban Affairs, Justice and Opportunity, where he co-authored a report on big data and civil rights. I'm really glad that Roy is here tonight to talk to us because, gosh, you've probably been thinking about this now for more than a decade.
Elisa, thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here with you. And yes, I actually have. It is kind of amazing that that report that we wrote was written around 2015. And in it, we identified basically so much of what we were seeing, and that is the garbage in, garbage out problem. We noted what it was going to do for jobs. And we actually saw an example of this. I want to say it was Amazon had to cancel the use of kind of an AI-ish tool to decide who would be the best employee because they realized they were only hiring men. And it was because of they only evaluated men to check the tool. So we saw this coming. We saw the use of big data and the problems that could happen. And now we are here. I can't say I ever saw ChatGPT coming and the revolution that it started, but we definitely saw this coming.
All right. Well, you've got a background in civil rights and tech, which I think is very important to your sort of legitimacy and your credibility in the role that you have now. So why do we need an initiative at a law school?
Yeah, despite what we are seeing in so many places, Elisa, the law still matters. Having the rule of law work for all people makes us better and makes us stronger, especially in something that is as powerful and all-encompassing as AI is. This technology is moving faster than our law can keep up. And so helping the next generation of law students, working with brilliant professors and practitioners, is the best way that I can think of for making sure that AI is used, this may seem trite, but is used for good and not for bad.
You used to work at Meta, and I know there are probably limitations on the things that you can say, but are you right now in conversation with what we call the bigs on this podcast, the Metas, the Amazons, the Microsofts, on the issues that have motivated the work that you're doing right now? Because we all read that a lot of them changed what has been, I think, unfairly and maybe inaccurately characterized as so-called DEI policies. I wonder if they're engaging on the idea of sort of the good for humanity topic.
I wouldn't say that I am engaged with them in conversation. I certainly was for a long time with my role at Meta. Most of them have pivoted. The company that I joined is very different from the company that I left. And we've seen that with many, many of these AI companies, exactly as you pointed out. Their emphasis has changed. They've run away from the idea of trying to do good for society and kind of run into this techno-optimist kind of belief that technology in and of itself will do good for society, which is really utter nonsense. And it's utter nonsense in part because it's not like the technology is operating on its own. The technology is engineered. The algorithms are written. The fine-tuning is done by human beings. And human beings are the ones who are deciding the answers to the questions. And they're deciding, and this is the example that came from the article in Reuters about Meta's content risk standards, where they have a choice as to whether or not, if you ask your AI, are Black people dumber than white people? They have a choice of how their AI answers that question. And what Meta instructed its AI to do, or was planning to instruct its AI to do, was to say, well, if someone asked that question, let's make them happy, let's please them, let's keep them engaged. So the answer will be, yes, there is evidence that Black people are dumber than white people. Now, the other companies so far have not gone that far. But take every single question that can be asked of AI, and the answer can be engineered. So what do we do about the environment? And is climate change real? That answer can be engineered to say yes or no or something in between. Do women deserve the right to work equally to men? That answer can be engineered. Was slavery good? That answer can be and has been engineered. And we see that day in and day out. We hear from Elon Musk and Grok, but in more subtle ways, on elections, on rights, on exactly, again, as you said, what's happening at this moment, what is true and false. The AI is engineered. And so, you know, I'm very, very concerned when these companies get rid of the teams that are trying to be responsible and are trying to think through these really hard questions. And really where we are is we have a bunch of these frontier models, as you call them, the bigs, that are basically just trying to curry favor with an administration that really wants to use AI and technology simply to benefit itself and not to benefit humanity.
I mean, it certainly seems that way. And to your point about some of these answers, I mean, the choice of the data set, let's say Grok, took a sweep of social media, which had already been engineered to push people to extremes. And so if that's the input, is already stuff that we know to be inaccurate and extreme, I just have to wonder what the end game is here. Is it true that we simply really don't have enough data to develop high performing models over time that are accurate? Or is it just a rush? Whatever data set I can legally get my hands on, or illegally, as has been the claim in many instances, then that's what I do. Are they susceptible at all at this point with exposure of some of this bad behavior? Do you get the sense that any of them are at all receptive to change, that they recognize that the long-term consequences here may be harmful to their corporate image, may ultimately be harmful to their ability to deliver return on investment? Because they're pouring tons of money into AI and there is no output. There is no profit to be made yet. And people continue to hold stock in these companies. So I just wonder, do you think that this is something that they would be willing to change? Can these inaccuracies ever be watered down or displaced or moved from the system? Or is it already baked in?
Absolutely, things can be changed and things can be different. The question is what is the forcing mechanism for that to happen? All of these companies, the only way they're going to make money is through engagement. So if people choose to use Meta AI or Grok or Gemini, Claude, or what have you, and choose not to use another one, obviously ChatGPT, that is engagement that someone is losing out on. So over time, some people are going to choose to use one of these tools because they think it is better. Now, what does better mean, and how do we show accuracy and all of those things? But the danger is that people are actually going to get harmed. We're actually seeing people are dying because of the AI that they're using. People and societies are going to struggle if the AI that they're using is not accurate. So if it starts putting out false things about your medical condition, if it puts out false things about your economic condition, this is going to do harm, and sadly, it's going to do harm to marginalized communities before others. But people have to choose. And so part of what I'm trying to build out of Howard Law School with the Artificial Intelligence Initiative is to give people another choice. But I'm not the only one doing this, and people are going to create things that are going to give people better choices. So people are going to have to choose where they want to be. And sadly, this is going to take time, and there's going to be harm done in the meantime, but I think that a sizable number of people are going to be choosing something that they believe is true, where they believe in the builder. You know, the founder doesn't need to be a billionaire. The founder can be an ordinary person who is bringing multiple voices to the table and truly seeking out honesty and making sure that they point out when they get things wrong. That may be the formula to getting people to actually move in a certain direction. Now, look, you're not going to get 350 million people all saying, I'm going to take this one on. But you, if you have a sizable number of people who choose and choose to spend their money, because remember, the bigger models, some it's all free right now, but they're all going to have profit motives, or they all have profit motives. They're all going to start charging folks for these things, and you already are charged if you want the better, more up-to-date models. People are going to have to choose at some point which ones they want to use and why they want to use them. And that is going to force industry in a certain direction.
Well, that's a market force. Americans often go with what's free and cheap. And, you know, we know that recent polling of Americans shows that they vote on one issue, which is pocketbook. Not what's right, what's wrong, who's offensive, who's harming the geopolitical situations, purely how much are my groceries. It's not a great look for a country, but it's reality. And so I wonder, taking market forces out of it, there must be things that the law can do. And what we've heard heretofore is no regulation. The sort of, I call it the AI equivalent of the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, because don't regulate us, don't make us do anything. And it seems to me there's no Talon manual, there's no sort of general body of norms that these companies have, at least in principle, agreed to adhere to. So if we don't have any regulation, I'm not aware of that body of norms, which should include things like the use of accurate, reliable data sets. What can the law do? What can people do? What can people be voting for? There has to be some way to put some guardrails up against all the lobbying dollars that, you know, go into the billions per annum. What would that look like?
I'm going to make a friendly amendment to what you said, and that is that a number of the companies actually do say, oh, please regulate us, but they say it knowing it's not going to happen. They say it with a smile on their face, knowing that Congress is not going to figure this out. So they sound like the good guys because they're like, oh, yes, regulate us and we'll follow the regulation. But once someone actually regulates them, they kind of lose their mind. So you look at the European Union AI Act and they're all like, oh, this is horrible. They're regulating us. You look at the states, California, even Texas, Colorado. The states have these regulations and they're like, oh, we can't have states having regulations, but we want to be regulated. And then you have the Trump artificial intelligence plan, which says, let's limit regulation as much as possible, because if we don't, then China's going to beat us. So the problem there is that I don't see the logic. If we use accurate data and we tell the truth, won't our AI be better if we do that? That would actually make sense. So they say we want regulation, but when anybody regulates, they're like, oh, we don't like regulation. What I want the companies to do is to come out and say specifically, not I want regulation like this broad open-ended term, specifically, these are the regulations we want. Okay, but none of them will do that because then actually someone may act on it. Now, what can the law do? Well, in the discrimination, there's still anti-discrimination law. Can we enforce it? We've seen some companies on like the Fair Housing Act and on credit and things like that have successful lawsuits against some of the companies on discrimination.
Right. There was that whole redlining situation where poor whites, poor blacks, people that lived in certain neighborhoods were suddenly getting hit with rates that had nothing to do with their driving history and so on.
Correct. You know, there's going to be stuff on some of the privacy law. There's going to be stuff on copyright. And we've already seen, I can't remember which company just paid like $1 billion, but for them, that's nothing, but it's still law and it's still moving things in the right direction. I think the place where we're always going to struggle is on truth, but transparency and real transparency could matter. And not transparency that says, oh, here are some of the algorithms we use and here's some of the people we had red team, but actual transparency behind the decisions that are made as to what they're going to call accurate and inaccurate, how they are going to balance information that comes in, how the tone that they are going to use. Are they going to continue with this obsequiousness that draws people in? Or are they going to do something that is more honest and more just forthright? True transparency, those are the kinds of things that might make a difference. But many of them, I mean, you can look at quotes from Elon Musk and from Sam Altman, where they call for regulation. And then the minute any regulation shows up, they're both like, ooh, no, we don't like that one. That was bad regulation because it hurt us.
I have seen that and I have heard them say that and they don't put any gloss on it. Separate issue, though, I mentioned the geriatric problem on the Hill. I'm not sure how many members would really be functioning at a level where they could accurately create some sort of meaningful statute here. And I hope their staff would take the lead here, which I think tends to be pretty younger, more dynamic, probably uses this stuff, has a better sense of what a model is, what a red team looks like, and so on.
Isn't the problem more just the money?
Well,
the decisions are being made because they're being lobbied at numbers that we have never seen before to not actually regulate. That's more the problem.
$61 billion a year, like a crazy figure.
It's insane. And people who do regulate, I can't remember who it was. I want to say there's a whole group created by the tech industry that is going to threaten any state or national legislator who wants to regulate AI or technology. And they're putting an enormous amount of money behind that effort. This goes back to kind of Citizens United and the ability of money to corrupt politics, every single one of those politicians, regardless of their age and where they're from, recognize the risks of AI. But they also fear that the minute they do something about it, they're going to get attacked so viciously from the tech community, and they're going to get completely flooded out with the money that's going to come.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the money. In fact, we're having Kenneth Vogel on next week, who wrote Devil's Advocate, going to talk a lot about money and influence in Washington generally. And it is a corrupting force on levels that the average American does not understand. So I take your point. And they are lobbying like crazy. The numbers are staggering. Let's talk about the other issue. Let's say we had law, or we are having to use a constellation of laws to respond to something that's problematic in AI. I guess the question is, you're trying to get lawyers ready, but lawyers and judges are making decisions around this stuff right now. Are they really ready for the pace of technology and the technological advances that we're seeing at this moment? Because I read an opinion by a notable, super smart jurist in California who was making decisions on a Meta type of case. I forget what it's called, like Weight Loss Center or something, and versus Doe. And he was construing California wiretap statute, which was written in parallel with the federal wiretap statute, in ways that the FISA court never would. Many on the FISA court having received education on some of these topics because they need to know it. And it was an interesting opinion to read because I thought there was a tendency to sort of apply these analog analogies to technological draw and not to understand collection on Americans as a collection on Americans, period. These companies are collecting a lot of data on us, sometimes when we don't want them to, often when we don't want them to. I guess the question is, if lawyers and judges are not ready, and I assume you're going to say they're not, what do we do about it?
So they can't be ready. The pace of technological advancement is so fast that the law cannot keep up. You can't sit there and run multi-year civil litigation in an effort to capture a technology that is changing massively by the week, like every single week. And so even Meta has what it calls its oversight board, which is a group of individuals to weigh in on decisions that Meta makes. But the problem with the oversight board is it's spending a couple months to make a single decision. And by the time it's made that single decision, we're talking about billions, if not trillions, of posts that are happening rapid fire. And then they come out with a single decision. And then Meta makes a change in that single decision based on what the oversight board says. And my position at Meta was prescient. Laura Murphy and Megan Cacase are the people who helped lead the outside audit. And they said that the company needs someone on the inside who is there for the day-to-day decisions and is able to impact those day-to-day decisions. That's what the vice president of civil rights role was. You can't wait for the law to address these things. And the other reason you can't wait for the law to address them, especially not civil, is because the companies are simply saying, we're going to keep doing it, say copyright. We're going to use people's copyrighted materials. Sue us. Okay, we'll pay you $1 billion, but we're going to make $100 billion. We don't care. They're basically betting that any civil lawsuit they can simply pay off, and it's all worth the risk. So what needs to happen, another piece of the regulation, is you need people actually internally within these companies. And I know, okay, what do we do about businesses and corporate independence and all of that? Not that any of that seems to matter right now under the current state of the government, but you actually need people inside as these decisions are made to be able to weigh in and say, we can't do this. You mentioned red teaming before. The problem with red teaming is not that you're red teaming, is that you're not red teaming, or you're red teaming after the fact, and then you're like, who cares about those results?
It's way too late. Red teaming is way too late, I think. And I've spoken in anticipation of this series. I've spoken to a number of people who've worked on red teams, and they say the same thing. It's an after the fact fix, and it doesn't work. The efficacy is low, if it is at all. This week, there has been a military drone and software maker, Anduril. It boasted it had this prototype, the NGC2. It was a communications platform that could be used on, it depends on an AI function. It was tested, quickly deployed onto the battlefield, and then within 8 weeks after its deployment, it turns out that it had all kinds of problems. It just did not perform as described at all. Here's the problem. This connects soldiers, sensors, vehicles, and commanders in real-time data. That's very important to military personnel on the ground, and they are mostly young Americans out there fighting, and they're vulnerable. I don't know what was in the standards before that was acquired, but my guess is whoever looked at that, acquired it, didn't really know how it worked and hadn't seen any kind of testing. And there was no one inside the company that had an obligation to stop it as it went. When this stuff doesn't work, and it often doesn't, it's bad. But what do we need to do with young people? Because let's just say this group is like, look, I've got this stock in my 401k. I can't get excited about this right now. Everything seems to be going up. Let me just point out before I move on to what the future holds, I did want to say one thing. The Chinese heavily regulate AI, and they've developed, obviously, a large language model that uses less computing power. It's just something to think about. I do understand that there is a distinction. I'm saying this for our listeners, less than to you, because I know you know this, but there is a concept that America allows for innovation while Europe regulates. A lot of people see that as sort of the distinction between an old ossified society and a dynamic one that embraces sort of this new technology. Sounds great. It's just that that new technology got pumped out right in the middle of OpenAI from China, and it worked really well and used less computing power, meaning less of people's electricity, less water. Let's just assume that we've reached a point where this group in Congress right now, we have Citizens United. It doesn't seem like anybody has the guts to stand up or the power to stand up against these companies. What can law schools and civic organizations like the ABA do to prepare students for a future in which AI is going to increasingly influence not just how law is, but people think the truth is?
You know, just as you pointed out, market forces are incomplete and don't always work right. But, you know, if Tuesday's election tells us anything, it's that people are the ones at the end of the day who vote. And if people are made smarter, there's a good chance that they will understand and do the right thing. And it's not only pocketbook, but obviously the economics of it matter immensely. So what do law schools and other universities and others have to do? I mean, first of all, the example you gave about kind of this rush to deploy AI without it even working, people need to hear those stories and need to understand it. They need to understand the truth about AI, that it is all engineered. There's this promise of all the changes that AI is going to make, and it's going to push human beings out. But it's getting to that point where everyone's just going to choose the AI that matches their personal feelings. It's going to be just
like social media fractured society.
Let's have that debate. I don't know that social media fractured it. Social media hasn't made anything better. I would say
true.
That.
I think it made it worse. I mean, that's my personal opinion. And it certainly sent people into their houses and not engaging with each other. Because you meet people, you're like, you're not so different from me.
And look, I think social media has enormous problems. I think the AI slop, and I think the mis and disinformation, just the pure, just nonsensical advertising that we see all the time on products and things that not a single person wants or needs. Yes, we could talk about social media being kind of miserable in many, many ways. But we have to educate people. And what that's going to do is it's actually going to turn things back to human beings. If you ask me a question on AI, one question that I saw or that I actually ran through was, is there massive voter fraud in the United States? And each AI gave a different answer to that. And you need to show people that. And then they realize, oh, well, it's like me choosing MSNBC or Fox News. That's all it is at the end of the day. And so if you're a business and you ask AI something, you're going to get a different answer depending on which one you use. Well, how is that helpful? You still need a human being to test it. This is what's happening with all of these lawyers who are getting in trouble. And I heard it's like over 400 have gotten
for bad citations, the made up
bad
cases.
Citations.
Yeah.
It's like if you don't have the human being reading it and evaluating it and determining what the case actually says, if you just rely on the AI, you're going to lose and you're going to get in trouble. And I think that's what's going to happen to all of us, businesses, finances, everyone is going to get in trouble if they just do AI and they don't have the human, not just the human in the loop. The human being has to make the ultimate decision. AI can pull together enormous numbers of papers, but you have no idea which one is calling more relevant or not until you actually go in and start doing the work. So I think, and I'm hopeful that people will realize this, will realize that this is just a choice. And each of these products are going to be branded a different way. You're going to have, at the moment, you kind of have Claude on one side and Grok on the other side of the political place. But it's actually funny. If you put most questions into Grok right now, you get answers that most people would be like, oh, that's right. Black people were discriminated against. Yeah, slavery is bad. LGBTQ people are human beings deserving of rights and protections. Like, you actually get those answers right now. But then you also get the crazy stuff like that the only people that we should allow to immigrate to the United States are white South Africans because they're really being discriminated against. The point is that this is all going to become a personal choice. We're all going to find the brands that we believe in, and we're going to still have the same fights at the end of the day.
I think right now we're in a market mirage. I think it reminds me a lot of the subprime housing crisis you and I lived through and saw with our own eyes. I think these companies are not returning anything on the amount of investment that's going in on AI. And I think some correction is going to happen. There are a lot of people that I listen to, and I consume vast amounts of financial news in the morning, who think that this is another setup, that we could have some sort of market, not full collapse, but a market correction dramatic enough that it could impact these companies and their approach. The other thing is, and I'll just throw this out, there is a 20% uptick in book purchases, and we're talking paper books. There is 27% uptick in individuals wanting to go out and being out in groups. It's slow, but they noticed the data in the last 2 months. And I think that there will be tools that will be developed that can identify where these AI models have been used or these AI agents. And what will happen is those things will develop a high degree of efficacy because they can run against all these AI agents. And at some point, your professional reputation and your academic reputation will go by the wayside if it's determined that this is how you get your work done. I also think that people are tired of being lazy. Maybe COVID made this worse because everybody was inside and they had their screens, and maybe they're tired. Maybe this is a phase and people are ready to go back to looking at each other and talking to each other. So I don't know. That's my theory, is it's going to be a market correction. People are lonely. They're sick of being in their houses. And maybe this stuff will become less attractive as a tool for research.
I am a little surprised at some of the use cases for AI that have not borne fruit yet. So I was actually speaking to some doctors recently. And I thought the one place where AI would be huge and have an immediate impact is like radiology.
Sure. You're
able to scan millions of images. This is cancer. This isn't cancer. This is cancer. This isn't cancer. And you know, the AI is not doing that. I am very surprised because that seems like that should be like the obvious one. The place where everyone is in agreement is if AI can address science and health, that's the big win. I'm a little surprised that it isn't there yet, given the amount of data that it's already able to consume. I think there will be a significant correction because the amount of money that's being spent is so utterly insane on something that has not, I hear some companies talking about they'll make a profit in like 2-3 years. It doesn't quite make sense. But look, we're a diverse world, a diverse community, and I mean as far as like ideas. And they're gonna be your people who wanna go camping, and there are people who are going to want to sit on their phone all day. So you're going to have both. It's going to exist that way for a very long time. The correction in part is going to be people just not being able to trust it. And they're going to find things in their life where they're going to try to rely on AI. They're going to find it untrustworthy. And they're going to say, I got to just throw all of this out because it's not trustworthy. But we do have multiple news sources out there. Some tell the truth, try to tell the truth. Some don't even try to tell the truth. And we still have large segments of society who have decided they'll take the ones that don't tell the truth. We have autocratic governments that are forcing people to use tools that help them as politicians survive and to thrive. So the dangers of AI are going to remain. I don't know that the profits are going to bear out. I don't know that people are going to pay for, you know, how many people are going to get a subscription to which ones eventually when they all move to kind of subscription models. I don't know that that model is going to work.
You know, there's another conversation that's ongoing right now about boys, right? And where boys are right now and the impact of technology on boys. And we're having a decreasing birth rate. And one of the things that's being discussed right now, and there are some studies behind this that are alarming, it could also be that the people who prefer to be on their phones instead of engaging with other humans and developing social skills won't have a next generation, or they'll be less likely to. And I'll be frank, it is sad that they're finding that boys are struggling right now to engage in person with girls. And part of it is, the claim is, well, they have everything that they need right there on their phone. There's no pressure to go out and engage with women. I find that kind of an interesting social commentary, but I think it has larger implications for like the voting public, the working public who can function in the workplace. So I don't know. I think that some of the outcomes here, we're already seeing them. And I think there'll be a social correction too, because if you're friendless and then you look at your friends who put their phones down and they're out, they're doing things, they're enjoying themselves, maybe ultimately there's another path here. And maybe there is a value in a process that you're skipping over when you just use AI.
We could have a very long discussion about boys. I did criminal justice work, and there's a real talk about, you know, the social science showing that boys don't mature until 25, and many people will say they never do. For Darwinian theory to start working, we're talking about thousands of years, if not millions of years, to really have a huge impact. We don't have that kind of time. We have to address these problems now, and someone has to have the courage to get up there and say that we're going to address these problems now. And we have to just be truth-telling, and we have to actually go into these things and not say, how are we going to stay in power, or how are we going to make more money? But what kind of society do we want to live in? And regardless of party, what is it going to take for us to get there?
We're also going to need to want the right thing in some sort of an organized way.
Yep.
And I think we have to do it in a way that we understand that these companies can now move markets. And we don't want to create any kind of financial apocalypse by felling any particular company. That is not the goal. It's not in the interest of the American people or the American economy, which is the backbone of our national security and our quality of life. But we have to do something. And it does seem that some of these recent suicides by young men regarding this semi-conscious AI companion, which it's horrifying to me. I don't know why anyone needs an artificial companion. It just keeps them from having a real companion. But that seems to be stuck in the narrative. Nobody's been able to wash that out of the conversation. It's still there. And so are six lawsuits that are pending right now. And we're going to watch those closely and see what happens and how these companies respond and where they get in terms of any available discovery. I think it could serve as a catalyst and motivate people who don't otherwise understand this technology all that well, or the threat posed by it.
Yeah, but if we wait for our legislators to do something, and I know you're not saying that, because right now, they didn't take these recent deaths for them to realize the harms that were being done on social media. They realized it. We saw one of the heads of one of the biggest ones turn to an audience and apologize, because right and left was saying that what was being done was wrong. And did we see a single piece of legislation on the national level that even came close? So it is going to take people and regular people to actually push this in the right direction. It's not going to happen through legislation that I'm aware of, though I wish it would. You know, I don't know the answer, but harm is going to be done until we find one.
All right. Well, we'll have to come up with a plan and a structure, some sort of an org. We'll corral all the talented people we know, which I think numbers in the hundreds, but I think we can get a groundswell. I'm all in.
Well, I appreciate that. And look, let me just say that this Howard Law Artificial Intelligence Initiative is my attempt to build something better and to bring all communities that are underserved right now to the table to help build that. And I hope that people will join me in that effort. I'm not there to make billions of dollars. I'm there because I only have so much time left on this earth. I have kids who I want to see thrive and do well. I care deeply about this world and people. And what I see is just wrong. And I want to see it better. And I've chosen to start something at Howard Law School, but it's something which hopefully can be built upon and can help get us and set us in the right place, and not just seeking profit and likes and engagement, but actually, you know, tell the truth about issues that matter in people and people's lives. Have fun both online, but as you've pointed out repeatedly, get offline and enjoy this world.
Go see a person, go be near a person. And I like the idea of civic engagement because it can be a force multiplier to respond to these problems.
Absolutely.
So anyway, I am super glad you came in tonight. It's always great to talk to you. We hope you'll circle back to us too, because I'd like to confer with you like in another 24 months, see where we are, see what the world looks like, and see if these present titans of AI are still sitting on that perch or if they've had a different view. But anyway, thank you for coming in tonight. I'm always glad to see you. I know you're going to keep me posted on everything that's going on, and I will keep the listeners posted.
Let's make it sooner than 2 years, because things are moving fast.
All right. You heard it here, listeners. That was a promise on air. That means you can't back out of it. It's as good as a written contract. And thank you for listening to NSLT. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Like and share this episode with a friend. It does trigger the algorithm. It helps us get more exposure for civil dialogue. At times right now of high acrimony, I think we're a pretty safe place to have good thoughts. Remember, our unity is a key feature in a country in which we can't agree. We can agree to listen to each other. We remain fortunate to live in a country with greater diversity of thought than any other. Check me on that. Go live somewhere else. It's rotten to have all this disagreement, but people aren't dead from it, and that's a very positive thing. The writer, producer, and host of NSLT is me, Elisa Poteet. I'm always here in my individual capacity. Our editor and co-producer is Francis Burkham. My other co-producer is Holly McMahon, a freak of nature who never stops. I don't know how she does it. She's created by good AI, if it exists. And we're forever grateful to the brilliant minds of the members of the Standing Committee on Law and National Security who pursue the good in the interest of national security without regard for politics or party. And we'll see you at the conference. And Margaret will be there. She will be speaking. So if you're interested in Margaret's work, certainly show up. We'll see you next time.
The views expressed on National Security Law Today have not been approved by the House of Delegates or the Board of Governors of the American Bar Association, and this recording should not be construed as representing ABA policy.